Are you thinking about getting into Dungeons & Dragons? Maybe you're looking to expand your horizons as a DM or a player. If that's the case, then it's time for you to check out The Dungeon Cast, the best D&D podcast out there that helps you passively learn all about the game just by listening. Join co-hosts Will and Brian as they break down the lore of a rich multiverse 50 years in the making in a lighthearted and beginner-friendly way. They cover everything from character creation options to tips for dungeon masters. There's something for everyone, no matter how long you've been playing TTRPGs. Find The Dungeon Cast anywhere you get podcasts or on YouTube.
Hey, it's Neil Helligrist, host of Adrenaline Realms Thriller Channel, and this is False Idols, Episode 4. Please enjoy.
Chaos, thought Layla, as she crossed the street and nearly got run over by a cab. The streets of nighttime Cairo were filled with cars, pedestrians, lights, and overwhelming chaos. Layla followed a maze of side streets using the GPS on her iPhone. She was a little ashamed to be dependent on a machine to navigate the streets of the city she had been born in, but she was beginning to understand that that's what life undercover meant. She might always be a stranger, even in familiar places, even to herself. Pierce had given her the iPhone the day after Layla arrived in Cairo, along with a Motorola phone and a relic of a Nokia phone that looked like the missing link between flip phones and smartphones. "Use the iPhone for official business," she'd said. "The Motorola is for whatever you want to use it for. And this phone here?" She'd taken the Nokia out of her pocket and handed it to Layla. "You use only for contact with me. This is a burner. This is our lifeline. You got it?"
"Got it."
That morning, Pierce had summoned her by encrypted email to meet at 9 that night. Approaching the safe house required vigilance and discretion, but Layla also walked quickly. She looked forward to Pierce's company and some time in the cocoon of the safe house. It was the only place she felt she could relax her cover. Layla glanced back, and seeing nothing suspicious, ducked down a narrow, well-lit side street lined with coffee houses. They were filled, she noticed, with men. Men perched in rickety chairs, men playing backgammon and dominoes, men smoking shishas, men glancing up and staring. Staring at her. Shit, she thought. It was a mistake to have gone this way. She couldn't even blame the GPS. The disruptive wake she left behind her churned, shaking heads and muttered disapproval. She glanced back and saw two young men in soccer jerseys rise from a table. They walked in her direction. Were they following her? She'd managed to blow part of her cover by the simple act of walking down the street. It was fitting that they wore soccer jerseys. Both men were built like soccer players. Slender, athletic, and, she suspected, fast. It was hard to tell how strong they were, but she guessed she could turn and punch them out, or stun them with a couple well-placed kicks, and vanish fast enough if she needed to. Just as she debated which of the two she might hit first, she passed three tourist policemen, noticeable in their white uniforms and black berets, standing at the entrance to a cafe. One glanced toward her as she passed, and she thought about asking for assistance, then instantly thought better of it. She didn't want to be on the radar of any police force in Egypt. A quick glance at her phone showed her that she didn't have far to go. She quickened her pace, and the men quickened theirs. She turned the corner onto a quieter commercial street lined by shuttered storefronts and brightly lit signs. What street was this? She considered taking a detour to throw the two men off. She looked back at her phone and saw that she was going to be late. Her annoyance gave way to impatience. She came to an intersection and spotted a shop across the street. Beyond the propped open door, Layla spied an older woman behind the counter.
She turned and darted across the street.
Assalamu alaikum, she said to the woman behind the counter.
Alaikum assalam,
nodded the woman, smiling. She looked to be in her late 50s or early 60s, with wisps of gray hair visible at the edges of her hijab. Hers was a friendly, soft, and welcoming face, in a night crowded by strange men. Layla slipped inside. The aisles were jam-packed with merchandise, but no one else was in the store. It reminded her of a Manhattan bodega. She walked fast to the back and lingered for only a moment, too anxious to turn and look at the entrance, her eyes darting this way and that until she spotted it. A narrow doorway without a door, stairs leading down into darkness. She didn't turn when she heard footfalls and a man murmur "Assalamu alaikum" at the front of the store and the storekeeper's friendly response. She lunged into the darkness. At the bottom of the stairs, she turned on her phone's flashlight and looked around. Shelves lined with overstock goods and wares, boxes of laundry detergent, canned food, bags of rice, and boxes of cereal. She spotted what she was looking for, a big metal door. She darted through it and closed it quickly behind her. She headed back toward the lights of the street. Once she reached the sidewalk, she ran. The two men were nowhere in sight, and she slowed to a light jog. She buzzed the intercom outside the safe house building and waited for Pierce to answer. She buzzed again and waited. Finally, she retrieved the key from her purse and let herself into the lobby. Upstairs, she listened at the door. Where might Pierce be at that hour? She had never thought about where Pierce might go for her own downtime. Hearing nothing, she used the second key and started to open the door when she heard footsteps in the hallway behind her. She turned, startled, as Pierce brushed past her into the apartment.
You're late,
she mumbled, stalking into the kitchen. Layla saw her throw a brown paper bag into an open kitchen cupboard and snap the cabinet shut. What the hell? Thought Layla, as she shut the door behind her.
So are you,
she said.
Well, let's get started then, said Pierce.
She headed for the two evidence boards, tidying things up for the night's briefing, straightening photos and securing pieces of tape with her thumb. They'd made some progress and had broadened and refined the nebulous cloud of Farwadi's social network a little. Layla felt excited and completely wiped out. Between the late nights partying with Jehan and the rest of the young socialites, and the constant playing at being someone else, there were few opportunities to meet with Pierce to take stock and gauge the progress of the investigation. Pierce turned to her.
What else have you got?
I talked to Miriam Goldman briefly, Layla said, using a dry erase marker to put a check mark beside the woman's picture. And I'm in contact with Abello, Chen, and the Roys.
Pierce taped the photos of those targets up next to the others on the first board. A second board was a kind of parking lot of hypotheses, questions, and a few dead ends, all labeled as such.
How about these?
Said Pierce, pointing to photos on the far left of the evidence board.
Ghaffar, Tanaka.
Layla eyed the cluster of about 10 photos.
Noor Ghaffar was at Miriam Goldman's at Farwadi's. I've met Tanaka's son, but connecting with the father might be a challenge.
How old's the son? Is there any possible involvement?
Layla frowned. Kiyoshi Tanaka was a rich Japanese real estate mogul. Hiro, his son, was a jet-setting DJ, passionate connoisseur of rap, and maybe one of the oddest people Layla had ever met. He could be anywhere in the world at that very moment. San Francisco, St. Petersburg, Delhi, Melbourne. He was on a constant search for new beats and new scenes. As she started to get to know these people, she found them, at turns, attractive and repulsive. At Georgetown, she'd met a lot of well-off people, but she'd never spent much time with that crowd. A kind of force field, most likely self-imposed, kept her out. Now she had to pretend to be one of them. She spoke a lot of the same languages they spoke, a fact that had endeared her to them, but she was slowly and precariously learning the most challenging language of all, the one that could betray her completely, the language of the very rich.
I doubt it. Hiro, that's the son's name. He was in town last week because of the Kafar family and some other friends. He's in his late 20s. Parties very hard, very eccentric. The father's hard to track down. But give me more time.
Okay. And Gafar?
I've connected with the family through the daughter. She says her mother...
Layla pointed to the photo of the matronly-looking Noor Gafar, a pillar of Cairo's social elite, and a prominent player in the high art and antiquities circles.
Collects a lot of art, and they travel to auctions all over the world. I think it's
promising. Hey, it's Neil
Hellegris,
host
fresh.
Of Adrenaline Realms Thriller
I'm
Channel, and this is False Idols,
the
episode
father?
4. Please enjoy.
Layla bit her lip.
Trying my best to keep a safe distance from him. But I did bump into him at Farwadi's party. Of course, you know, he's high-ranking in the GID.
Any time the General Intelligence Directorate came up, it sucked the air out of the room. It took an act of willful and collective denial, and a ton of operational audacity to work undercover on the home field of one of the Middle East's most sophisticated intelligence agencies. But here we are, thought Layla, with perverse pride. Pierce turned and stared at the board, clutching a green marker.
Okay. Okay.
She was talking to herself. Layla looked at the board as well, but it didn't reveal anything. She wanted to give Pierce something, anything to show that she was making progress.
I met Bennett Rothkopf and his son, James Rothkopf. I think I might have an in through the son. He's part of the crowd that runs with Jehan Gafar, that's Noor and Gamal Gafar's daughter. But he's also part of his dad's business. I'm going to keep on that to find out more about the Rothkopf Gallery.
Sounds promising,
said Pierce, unconvincingly. And Layla sighed with disappointment. That was all she had.
Well, I'll let you know how it goes, she said.
Thanks.
Pierce nodded, but she didn't turn around.
Great,
thought Layla as she rose from the sofa. She knew there was a lot of work ahead of them, but she wondered if Pierce couldn't be just a little more supportive, a little more encouraging. Maybe she'd expected too much from Pierce, thought Layla. Or maybe she wasn't making progress as fast as she should.
I'll just, let myself out.
Layla sidled toward the door.
All right,
said Pierce, still not turning her gaze from the evidence board. Layla glanced back at Pierce, and for a moment, she felt like Watson leaving Sherlock Holmes to a solitary session of deductive reasoning. She wondered if that's what it took to be as successful as Pierce. Complete and all-consuming concentration. She shook her head as she let herself out of the apartment.
How did I end up here?
She thought, as she closed the door behind her. Farwadi's lawyer, David Wasserman, was an imposing, dark-haired man in an expensive suit. His office wasn't the mahogany and brown leather man cave that Layla would have expected. It was comfortable, with soft gray upholstery and an overstuffed couch under a large window with the obligatory panoramic view of New York. Farwadi sat on the couch, looking so calm and collected that Layla suspected he'd popped a Xanax.
My client would like to cooperate,
Wasserman announced, facing the agents across his pale wood desk.
But wearing a concealed microphone is out of the question.
Pierce rose from her chair.
We've been through this. Wait,
said Wasserman, holding up a well-manicured hand and a wrist bearing a massive silver watch that must have cost as much as 2 years' worth of Layla's salary.
He would be willing to work with you to establish your own cover identity as an art dealer or collector and introduce you to the people he knows.
Pierce gestured for Layla to join her on the far side of the room and huddled close.
Pretend we're really considering it, she said quietly. I don't want to shut him down right away.
We're not considering it? Asked Layla.
Can't. I worked in the embassy, remember? Someone might recognize me.
Send me, said Layla, surprising herself with her own words.
What?
The lawyer and his client were now staring at them as Layla's mind raced, trying to comprehend why she had just volunteered for this insane, not to mention illegal, mission. In Cairo, of all places.
I can do this. I can run him. I can be an asset. Just
shh.
The senior agent held her forefinger up to her lips and glanced across the room at Wasserman and Farwadi, who were conferring in low voices. Pierce squinted at her.
Listen, I don't know if you know what you're asking. Have you ever been undercover before?
No. But
she started, then hesitated.
I've transcribed audio from wiretaps, including for undercover operations.
She regretted it as soon as she said it. She knew she sounded desperate. Pierce thought about that for a few seconds. She didn't look impressed.
You grew up in Cairo. You're even more likely to get recognized than I am.
I haven't set foot in Cairo since I was 18. I spent my childhood in a slum called Manshiat Nasser.
As Layla spoke, it dawned on her that she had never told anyone this.
The locals call it Garbage City. Nobody who lived outside that place would know me. And no one who lived inside is going to pop up unexpectedly at a gallery opening.
She knew that the anger in her voice was fueled by embarrassment. If Pierce reacted with disgust, or worse, pity, Layla thought she very well might sink through the floor and disappear. Pierce crossed her arms and nodded.
All right, she said simply.
Layla exhaled a long, pent-up breath. Pierce turned back to Wasserman.
How about this? Your client will work with Agent Aldeeb to establish her cover and introduce her to his friends.
Farwadi rose from the couch and approached Layla.
That might work,
he said, as he examined her like a piece of art he might want to buy.
You remind me of my youngest niece.
That's perfect, she said. You can introduce me as your long-lost cousin who wants to start collecting art.
He considered this, then nodded.
Good,
said Wasserman, turning back to Pierce.
I believe we have a deal.
As they continued to discuss the details, Layla heard their voices through a kind of fog. She felt exhilarated, terrified, and triumphant all at the same time. For the first time in months, Layla felt completely alive. She took the E-train to Long Island City, then trudged another half mile to her apartment building. Her commute was a pain in the ass, but this was as close as she could get to the city without choking on the rent. And that was with two roommates. Brianna and Sophie were there when she got home, eating pizza in the living/dining room, along with three other young women she didn't recognize and didn't expect to see again. Her roomies seemed to go through friends like Kleenex. Layla had never been one of them. She'd answered their ad on a rental website when she transferred from Pittsburgh to New York 2 years ago. They were only a year or two younger than Layla, but utterly alien to her, working at jobs they didn't care about and blowing every cent they earned on clothes and clubs. If Brianna and Sophie had long-term plans for their lives, she would be surprised.
As a podcast network, our first priority has always been audio and the stories we're able to share with you. But we also sell merch, and organizing that was made both possible and easy with Shopify. Shopify is the global commerce platform that helps you sell and grow at every stage of your business, from the launch your online shop stage all the way to the did we just hit a million orders stage. Whether you're selling scented soap or offering outdoor outfits, Shopify helps you sell everywhere. They have an all-in-one e-commerce platform and in-person POS system, so wherever and whatever you're selling, Shopify's got you covered. With the internet's best converting checkout, 36% better on average compared to other leading commerce platforms, Shopify helps you turn browsers into buyers. Shopify has allowed us to share something tangible with the podcast community we've built here, selling our beanies, sweatshirts, and mugs to fans of our shows without taking up too much time from all the other work we do to bring you even more great content. And it's not just us. Shopify powers 10% of all e-commerce in the U.S. Shopify is also the global force behind Allbirds, Rothy's, and Brooklinen, and millions of other entrepreneurs of every size across 175 countries. Because businesses that grow, grow with Shopify. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/realm, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/REALM now to grow your business, no matter what stage you're in. Shopify.com/realm.
Anna Sheridan, missing for nearly 6 months now.
I need you to find me.
The Sheridan Tapes, a serialized horror mystery podcast. Stream the complete series today on Realm and on all podcasting platforms.
As she walked past the group, Sophie called out,
"Oh, before I forget, the landlord told us that some of the pipes have been leaking again, so we should keep an eye out for water damage. We didn't see any out here, but I know you don't like anybody going in your room," she said, and two of the other women giggled at her emphasis on the words. "So we haven't looked in there."
"Thanks," Layla muttered, as she went into her bedroom.
She noticed a distinctly musty smell that she attributed to a damp patch on the ceiling above her bed, which, she soon discovered, had dripped onto her pale blue duvet. She scooted the bed away from the leak as far as she could. In a 10-foot by 7-foot room, that wasn't very far. She emptied a plastic storage bin full of old coursework from her bureau training and set it under the leak. She knew that most people would feel cramped in such a tiny bedroom, but after growing up in a 3-room apartment with a family of 5, having any amount of space to herself felt like a luxury. She put on pajamas, brushed her teeth, lay in bed, and listened to the water drip, drip, drip from the ceiling, thinking that in Cairo, on this extraordinary investigation, she might finally escape from a life she no longer wanted. As the next few weeks passed, Layla tried not to lose her mind, continuing with her mundane translation tasks as if her whole life wasn't about to change. Pierce left for Cairo early on. The day she'd flown out of New York, she'd written simply, "Adios, see you soon," in a text that Layla received while sitting in a mandatory 3-hour briefing on changes to the Bureau's health benefits plan. Pierce had returned to her former job as legal attaché at the American Embassy in Cairo. The plan, as she'd explained before she left, was for her to take advantage of her position to establish operations in Cairo. She would set Layla up with a luxury condo and designer wardrobe suitable for a wealthy heiress. She'd also secure a safe house in a modest neighborhood near the embassy. As her departure approached, Layla felt a rising anxiety with each morning's arrival. In the end, though, she'd found it disturbingly easy to walk away from her life in New York. It had felt like it was time to go. What did she have to lose? She'd been on autopilot for nearly a year in the desk gig. She was tired of case files piled neck high on her desk, waiting for the elusive approval of some associate deputy director who likely couldn't give a damn who signed them. She dismantled her life in New York efficiently, quietly, discreetly. At work, she filed away the mountain of paperwork, shredded documents, tied up loose ends. She spent late nights studying the materials Pierce had given her. Through Craigslist, she sold the nice bicycle she had barely ever had time to ride. She had her mail routed to the field office, dumped bags of her cast-off clothes at the Salvation Army, cleared what few dishes she had from the kitchen she shared with her roommates, whittled away at her life with the diligence and discipline of a performance artist, committing an act of stoic self-eradication. The Layla she had been would be a cipher and a mystery to anyone who asked. The Rothkopf Gallery was on the edge of Midan Tahrir, Cairo's bustling downtown district. Layla stopped at the curb and looked left and right. Opposite the building, a street vendor was cooking up something delicious. The scent of ful and tamia, two of her favorite foods growing up, made her mouth water. She was intent on connecting with the Rothkopfs, on finding out as much as she could about their gallery and its operations. She planned to stop by the gallery and charm her way in. If Bennett was there, she could find out more about him and it would be a win. If his cute son was there, it would be a win-win. She fished in her purse for some bills and headed toward the vendor. Bringing James and his father lunch from a street vendor might seem out of character for an heiress who had supposedly lived most of her life outside of Cairo. Then again, her partying with the rich had shown her that they had all kinds of quirks and tastes. So what if she could afford daily lunch at the Nile Ritz-Carlton, but had a thing for street vendor food? Takeout bags of fava beans and falafel in hand, Layla dodged a moped that ripped down the street. The door to the gallery building led into a foyer, and a sign by a staircase and elevator read, Rothkopf Gallery of Ancient Art, Sales, Restoration, and Appraisals. The gallery occupied the second floor above a dental practice. This was so different from the elegant facades she'd seen in the car with Pierce weeks ago as they drove through Manhattan. This gallery wasn't even open full-time. The hours listed were only slightly more generous than those of its dentist neighbor. 3 days a week, from 10 a.m. to 3 p.m., or by appointment. She walked up the narrow staircase to the Rothkopf Gallery on the second floor. The sounds of Cairo, the bleating horns, motorcycles, and the muezzin's noon call to prayer, all of it slowly faded away, magnifying the clop of her sandal heels on the gleaming hardwood floors. The main gallery space, a large room, was surprisingly dim, illuminated only by the sunlight coming in through a narrow window. Hello? Layla called out softly. Nobody responded. Maybe the sign on the door was wrong, and they weren't open after all. She ventured farther into the room, taking in a wall of wooden funerary masks. Their dead eyes followed her. Layla shuddered. She rotated slowly, taking in the gallery space, registering a door that led down a hallway to other rooms, the Celtic, Judaic, and contemporary galleries. Like the nearby Coriander Gallery, this modern space was probably once an ordinary office that had been repurposed. Its walls were gleaming white, just like any high-end gallery, and adorned with textiles, art, and limestone reliefs. Glass cases filled with relics formed a square in the middle of the room, and an old-fashioned wooden desk and chair occupied one corner. None of the cases were lit. She looked up and noted the location of several security cameras near the recessed lighting and in the corners of the gallery. Someone stepped out of the hallway, seemingly out of the shadows, startling her. A tall, dark-skinned man with high, angled cheekbones glared down his nose at her. He wore black slacks, a black jacket, and a black baseball cap with the brim pulled down low. Her eyes flicked downward out of habit. In his right pants pocket, she registered the bulge of a holstered pistol.
"Food is not allowed in the gallery," the man said, pointing at her bags. As he stepped closer, into the sunlight that leaked through a window, she let out a long breath. He was a security guard, not a robber. She'd seen him before, at the Coriander Gallery gala, standing at Bennett Rothkopf's side.
"I was looking for James. I'm a friend of his. I brought him some lunch."
"James is not here."
"Oh. When will he be back?"
"Soon."
Clearly, he was a man of few words. Layla guessed that if she ever needed to talk to this guy at some point, it was going to be exhausting.
"Great. Mind if I wait for him?"
"Be comfortable."
The man gestured toward a stool. She perched on the edge, feeling far from comfortable. He was polite, but his gaze was unsettling, as expressionless as the funerary masks on the wall above him.
"I have seen you before," he said.
Layla tried to place his accent. Not British, not Australian.
"At a party, I think. At the Coriander, yes?"
South African. That wasn't an accent she heard so often in Egypt. She wondered how he had come to be working with Bennett in Cairo. But she had no time to answer his question or fire off any of her own. Rapid footsteps approached from down the hall, and then her person of interest, Bennett Rothkopf, appeared. Though he looked a little more tired than when she'd met him before, he was dressed just as sharply, today sporting cream-colored linen pants and a blue short-sleeved button-up shirt. His steel-gray hair was slicked back with just enough product to keep it in place without looking too stiff. He seemed approachable, but in a carefully constructed way.
"Can I help you?"
Bennett asked.
"Hi, Mr. Rothkopf, Layla Noir," she reminded him. "We met at the fundraiser a few days ago."
"Yes, Layla, of course, good to see you."
Bennett hesitated a moment, as if unsure how to greet her. She extended her hand, American style, and he shook it with enthusiasm.
"Forgive my awkwardness," he said with a laugh. "It's just that I don't often shake hands with Egyptian women."
"It's no problem at all. I grew up mostly in San Francisco," Layla explained.
"Oh, yes."
His smile was warm.
"James told me about you. He said you went to Brown and that you studied in Paris."
"Zurich,"
she corrected.
"Ah, oh, that's right."
He smiled, displaying white, even teeth. Expensive teeth.
Was that a test? She wondered.
Maybe.
She smiled back. Maybe not. But the thought that James had mentioned her intrigued her. He was talking about her to his dad. Not that it mattered. This was work. She straightened her shoulders.
"I was just in the area and thought I'd pop by to see the gallery."
She held up the bag.
"And to bring you guys some lunch."
"That smells delicious,"
Bennett said.
"Aren't you nice? We've been so busy today, we might have forgotten to eat. Tell you what, I'll show you around the gallery while you wait for James. He had to run out to the FedEx office, but he should be back any moment."
Bennett gestured toward the security guard.
Have you met?"
"Not officially. We were just chatting."
Bennett clapped the other man's shoulder.
"This is Makalo Naidu, Mackie. He handles security for the gallery and personal security for me when I'm on business in the region. Mackie's an old family friend."
She noticed the outline of the man's muscles beneath his shirt at the shoulders.
Mackie, Layla is Nassim Farwadi's cousin,
Bennett continued.
Newly arrived in Cairo and an aspiring collector, yes?
That's right, said Layla. It's very nice to meet you, Mr. Naidu.
A pleasure,
said Mackie, though his smile was thin as they shook hands.
I have to go,
he said, politely but decisively.
I must pick up some supplies.
He retreated down the hallway, leaving her alone with Bennett. Bennett flipped some switches behind him, flooding the gallery space with light. The cases lit up too.
We're conserving electricity, he explained.
It gets so hot in here with the afternoon heat. The lights only make it warmer.
It is warm, Layla agreed,
glancing around and noting four oscillating fans in the gallery, none of which were turned on. Bennett steered her from case to case, describing the different types of artifacts organized by era. Mesopotamian, Near Eastern, Greek, Roman, Etruscan, Byzantine, Coptic. Coptic. That case called out to her. The flat images of saints painted on wood beckoned to her with their hands, their eyes, as if beseeching her to remember them. These were the saints who had given countless of her ancestors solace over centuries of persecution. She'd never felt religious, but her Coptic identity was strong. She lingered, letting her gaze rest on a shelf of them, but Bennett was walking on toward the rest of the Egyptian section, and she hurried after him.
What a fantastic collection. It feels almost like a museum, Layla remarked. I can hardly believe all these things are for sale.
Thank you. Our New York gallery is even bigger,
Bennett said, smiling with uncensored pride.
We're not as well established or extensive as your cousin's gallery, of course. As an Egyptian native, Nassim enjoys certain advantages in this business.
He shrugged.
I'm just a guy from New York. But we hold our own. And while your cousin carries some contemporary art, we stick to the classic antiquities and attract a slightly different client base in that way.
Who is your typical client?
Asked Layla.
Oh, we have a wide range, replied Bennett. As you can see, our artifacts and prices vary. We have trinkets that sell for mere hundreds of dollars, often to tourists passing through Cairo. Then we have pieces of far greater value and rarity for the more discerning collector. We work with individuals and with institutions at any level. We also pursue special requests.
So if I wanted to find a specific item, you could get it for me?
Within reason, yes. I'm confident we can find almost anything. We have a vast network of connections both here in Egypt and internationally.
He looked at her closely.
Why do you ask? Are you looking for something?
Maybe.
Layla stooped down to scrutinize a slate-blue ring with a wide-jet eye. Just at that moment, the gallery doors swung open, and James strode in. She watched him, wondering if her impression of him from the Arts Council fundraiser had been on target. His bright eyes, his athletic build, and the confidence of his gait as he walked across the room riveted her attention. She could investigate him all day, or night long, she thought, with a mischievous smile.
Sorry I'm late, he said.
He was distracted, juggling his motorcycle helmet while pulling the strap of his leather satchel over his head.
Those damn checkpoints. The embassy neighborhood was almost completely blocked off.
He stopped mid-sentence as his eyes landed on her. She grinned. It was good to see him, not to mention to see how happy he was to see her.
Layla dropped by, said Bennett, turning toward his son. And was kind enough to bring us lunch. Wow, thank you, that's so sweet of you. There's a kitchen just down the hall,
said James.
I'll get some plates.
I'll come with you.
She walked beside him. He was, she realized, one of those rare people whom she liked immediately. It didn't hurt that he was really good-looking. And, of course, he could be useful. As they walked down the hall, James hesitated.
"Hey,"
he said, taking hold of her hand to bring her to a stop.
"I was thinking about you."
"Oh?" Her fingers tingled where he held them.
"I wondered if you'd like to go dancing with me and some friends. We're headed out this Saturday, some new place right by the river."
He seemed a little nervous, and it was totally adorable.
"Jehan will be there, I think. Hiro, too."
She smiled brightly at him.
"I'd love to."
She wanted to believe her excitement was purely due to the prospect of getting closer to three of the main families on her evidence board. But the idea of a night of fun in James's company had its own unprofessional appeal.
False Idols is written by Lisa Klink, Patrick Lawyer, and Diana Wren. Performed by Lauren Ezzo. Produced by Amanda Rose Smith. FBI advisor Robert K. Whitman. Theme music by Amanda Rose Smith. You're listening to Adrenaline False Idols, created and produced by Realm, your portal to another world. Listen away.
Hello, dear stranger. I'd like to introduce you to something new, or perhaps something very, very old. The Heresies of Radolf Burntwine is a horror fantasy medical mystery following the titular monk turned traveling medical investigator. Follow Radolf as he navigates a nightmare world in which viruses are gods and the human race are not their favored children. Steeped in history and an aesthetic that can only be described as a combination of occult academia and laboratory Judaica, the Heresies of Radolf Burntwine have been described as Umberto Eco meets H.P. Lovecraft. For more information, check out the Patreon at thorb.info. But take care, dear stranger, for some truths are best left unknown.
Adrenaline is produced by Nicole Kreuter and Kaylin West. Associate produced by Devin Shepard. Executive produced by Molly Barton and Julian Yap. Hosted by Neil Helligers. Audio editing by Kaylin West. Original theme by Marcus Bagala. Original cover art by Kendall Thomas. Find more shows like this on Apple, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcasts.